The holdovers from the Clinton era, Clark and CIA Director George Tenet, were going nuts. Bush administration insiders would later say they never felt that the two men had been fully on board with Operation Ignore. Tenet was getting reports of more and more chatter about possible terrorist activity. Through June and July, according to one source quoted in the Washington Post, Tenet worked himself nearly frantic with concern. In mid-July, quote, George briefed Condi that there was going to be a major attack, an official told Time. Only time would tell what happened next. On July 16, the deputies finally held their long-overdue holistic integration meeting and approved Clark's plan. Next, it would move to the Principals Committee, composed of Cheney, Rice, Tenet, Secretary of State Colin Powell, and Rumsfeld, the last hurdle before the plan could reach the president. They tried to schedule the meeting for August, but too many of the principals were out of town. They had taken their cue from the president. August was a time to recharge the batteries, to take a well-deserved break from the pressures of protecting America. The meeting would have to wait till September 4. No one understood better the importance of taking a break to spend a little special time with the wife and dog than President George W. Bush. Bush spent 42% of his first 7 months in office either at Camp David, at the Bush compound in Kennebunkport, or at his ranch in Crawford, Texas. As he told a $1,000-a-plate crowd at a fundraiser in June, quote, Washington, D.C. is a great place to work, but Texas is a great place to relax. That's why on August 3, after signing off on a plan to cut funding for programs guarding unsecured or loose nukes in the former Soviet Union, he bade farewell to the Washington grind and headed to Crawford for the longest presidential vacation in 32 years. One note, the importance of the loose nukes program, devised by Senators Nunn and Lugar, was explained to me by Jim Walsh of Harvard's Project for the Atom in the following amusingly straightforward way. There are 600 million metric tons of highly enriched uranium and weapons-grade plutonium in Russia and the former Soviet Union. You cannot make a nuclear weapon if you don't have highly enriched uranium or weapons-grade plutonium. If you want to prevent a terrorist from getting a nuclear weapon, job one is securing all available highly enriched uranium and weapons-grade plutonium. On August 6, on its 172nd day, Operation Ignore suffered a major blow. Already, the operation was becoming more and more difficult to sustain as the intensity of terror warnings crescendoed. Now on August 6, CIA Director Tenet delivered a report to President Bush entitled, Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. The report warned that Al-Qaeda might be planning to hijack planes, but the president was resolute. Operation Ignore must proceed as planned. He did nothing to follow up on the memo. Actually, that's not entirely fair. The president did follow up a little bit. Sitting in his golf cart the next day, Bush told some reporters, quote, I'm working on a lot of issues. National security matters. Then, Bush rode off to hit the links before dealing with a stubborn landscaping issue by clearing some brush on his property. The next day, he followed up again, telling the press, I've got a lot of national security concerns that we're working on. Iraq, Macedonia, very worrisome right now. But Iraq and Macedonia weren't the only things on Bush's mind. One of the interesting things to do is drink coffee and watch Barney chase armadillos, he told reporters on a tour of the ranch later in his vacation. The armadillos are out, and they love to root in the flower bed. It's good that Barney routs them out of their rooting. On August 16, the INS arrested Zacharias Moussaoui, a flight school student who seemed to have little interest in learning to take off or land a plane. The arresting agent wrote that Moussaoui seemed like, quote, the type of person who could fly something into the World Trade Center. Trying to pique the interest of FBI headquarters in Washington, a Minneapolis FBI agent wrote that a 747 loaded with fuel could be used as a weapon, If this information had been shared and analyzed, for example, by a newly founded Homeland Security Agency, it might have sparked memories of the Clinton-thwarted 1996 al-Qaeda plot to hijack an American commercial plane and crash it into CIA headquarters. On August 26, still on the ranch, Bush discussed with reporters the difference between his two dogs. Spot's a good runner. You know, Barney, terriers are bred to go in the holes and pull out varmint. And Spotty chases birds. Spotty's a great water dog. I'll go fly fishing this afternoon on my lake. And you know something? He did just that. Among those left to swelter in the D.C. heat that August was one Thomas J. Pickard. No fly fishing for him. In his role as acting FBI director, Pickard had been privy to a top-secret, comprehensive review of counterterrorism programs in the FBI. The assessment called for a dramatic increase in funding. Alarmed by the report and by the mounting terrorist threat, Pickard met with Attorney General John Ashcroft to request $58 million from the Justice Department to hire hundreds of new field agents, translators, and intelligence analysts to improve the Bureau's capacity to detect foreign terror threats. On September 10, he received the final Operation Ignore communique, an official letter from Ashcroft turning him down flat. To give Pickard credit for adopting a professional attitude, he did not call Ashcroft the next day to say, "I told you so." Clark's plan to take the fight to al-Qaeda lurched forward once more on September 4, 2001. 8 months after he had first briefed Condi Rice about it, and nearly 11 months after Clinton had told him to create it, Clark's plan finally reached the Principal's Committee that served as gatekeeper to the Commander-in-Chief. Bush was back from his trip, rested up, and ready for anything. Cheney, Powell, Rice, Rumsfeld, and the other principals debated the plan and decided to advise Bush to adopt it with a phased-in approach. Phase 1, to demand cooperation from the Taliban and make fresh overtures to al-Qaeda opponents, such as the Northern Alliance, would begin the moment the president signed off on the plan. Phase 0, however, came first. Wait several days as the proposal made its way to the president's desk. On September 9, as the plan cooled its heels, Congress proposed a boost of $600 million for anti-terror programs. The money was to come from Rumsfeld's beloved missile defense program, the eventual price tag of which was estimated by the Congressional Budget Office at between $158 billion and $238 billion. Congress's proposal to shift $0.6 billion over to counterterror programs incurred Rummy's ire, and he threatened a presidential veto. Operation Ignore was in its 207th day. On Operation Ignore, day 208, Ashcroft sent his Justice Department budget request to Bush. It included spending increases in 68 different programs. Out of these 68 programs, less than half dealt with terrorism. Way less than half. In fact, none of them dealt with terrorism. Ashcroft passed around a memo listing his 7 top priorities. Again, terrorism didn't make the list. On that day, I left for Minneapolis to visit my mom and play some charity golf. On the next day, the world shook. The day after that, they started blaming Clinton, covering their tracks, and accusing liberals of blaming America.